Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book. I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana. Say hello, Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And we're going to be reviewing a book which I read, but actually Juliana didn't read, and I wouldn't recommend her reading it, partly because it's not very good, and partly because it's really, 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 really long. And if you're going to read a not very good book, it really needs to be about, 100 pages. 100 pages of not very good book you can get through okay, isn't that right? Or if it's an audiobook, like an audiobook which is like 2 hours long, which is a bit rubbish, you're like, oh, I can do this.
How many pages does this one have?
Okay, well, let's have a look at this. We're going to be reviewing Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson, which was actually recommended quite a few times, and it only came out this year, May 19th, 2015, as Wikipedia tells me. Pages, 880 pages worth of science fiction stuff. And lots of people have said stuff about this book. They said, oh, it's actually really great. It's a great throwback to kind of like, maybe like 1970s, 1980s hard science fiction. So it's not about the social stuff. It's not about all characters. It's not weird stuff. It's just, okay, we're going for a hard science fiction. We've got technical engineering, orbital mechanics. And I'm like, oh, I could probably do with quite a bit of that.
Sounds fun.
We read some different, 1960s, 1970s, like Ringworld. You're going, okay, I could do with Ringworld, but without all the racism and sexism and that kind of stuff. And you just the engineering part, which like how things are built and the different spaceships.
The basic ideas.
Okay, so I thought I'd give this one a go. So this is called Seven Eves. I thought it might be pronounced Seven of Us, because it's like seven and then seven backwards at the end. Seven of Us. Seven Eves. But it's actually Seven Eves. They say right at the very beginning of the audiobook, Seven Eves. Now, I'll just do a quick basic setup of this. The reason... you just said, I've never read any Neal Stephenson before, except... what?
Snow Crash.
Snow Crash. And what did you think of Snow Crash?
Yay.
Okay, so, yeah, my review of Snow Crash was kind of like, yay, but more of a kind of no. But then I read Anathem. And Anathem, I think, is one of the most, like, one of the highest rated books I've ever reviewed on the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. And I was like, okay, are we going into this book? Is this going to be as amazing, in my head, amazing as Anathem by Neal Stephenson, or is it going to be as terrible as Snow Crash, as also by Neal Stephenson? Like, which end of the spectrum are we going to get here? And it turns out it's certainly no Anathem. It's nowhere near as good as that. But also, it's not as bad as Snow Crash. However, I didn't finish it. I got into section three, part three of this book, and... And I posted on Goodreads, I was like, unless anyone says anything differently, I'm just going to finish this one. I'm going to read the Wikipedia page to see if there's any spoilers or to find out what happens before the end. And I'm just gonna do the review. And that's what I decided to do. Nobody, I had a bit of back and forth with someone called Jesse. Not Jesse from the SFF Audio, but somebody else. And we pretty much, okay, I'm not going to finish it. So this is a book that I didn't finish, but I did get through. Let me just tell you this. This is like an audio book. Let me just go to the Audible page here. The Audible page says, Audible's got this new icon thing. So, this says it's 31 hours and 55 minutes. I did get over 22 hours into this audiobook. I think there's still,
that's like, long.
I still think there's like eight hours remaining of this audiobook.
Well done.
It's pretty, so I think I can do a pretty good review of it. I got into part three. Looking at other people's reviews, people who really enjoyed the first two parts didn't enjoy part three. Other people who thought the middle part was a bit of a letdown, it kind of picks up again in part three again. So the way this works is the setup, and I'm explaining this to Juliana. I think I've mentioned this to you before. I brought Juliana on just because she's heard me complaining about this book as I've been going through.
All the holidays long.
No, not quite.
Oh, but a bit, yeah.
A bit of it, a bit of the holiday. But we were... So the thing is, okay, the start of this book, it starts off pretty much by saying, the moon exploded. And you're like, why? And they're like, oh, maybe something to do with a wormhole crashing through it. No, it doesn't really matter. The moon breaks into different pieces. And the people on Earth go, oh, whoa, the moon is broken into different pieces. What are we going to do about that? And it's decided that, well, there's not very much we can do. The moon is broken. And then they go, oh, no, but what if it keeps breaking into smaller pieces and smaller pieces and smaller pieces? And then each bit is going to crash into another bit, and it's going to be this cascading effect, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse, and it's going to go through phase until the entirety of the Earth is going to be bombarded by bits of moon and wipe out dun, 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 the entire Earth. So we've got to get into space. Yeah, the whole point of this is they got to set up an ARC project to get enough people into space that the people on Earth, even if they're wiped out, humanity can survive. So now this is all of part one. I'm not giving away any spoilers. This is all like in the first few chapters of this massive, massive, massive book. So the first part, the first third of the book is them going, we need to build a spaceship. And that's what they do. They build a spaceship.
Cool.
Part two is when the bits of rock start falling onto the Earth and what the people in the spaceship do. And then part three, well, I'll get onto part three in a minute, in a few minutes, and then I'll explain what happens in, what kind of thing goes on in part three. So that's the story, really. They build a space station in space out of the International Space Station, which in this book is called Izzy. As in International Space Station.
How funny.
Izzy. And so they use Izzy as the basis of the project to get as many people up there as possible. And so I thought, well, that's the basic setup. So now let's go through my notes on my...
Can I ask a question?
Go for it. Ask as many questions as you want.
If the moon explodes...
Well, not explodes,
breaks apart.
Yeah.
Isn't the first thing that happens is something going wrong with the oceans?
Well, actually, they say no, because it breaks apart, but it all kind of stays in the same orbit.
Huh.
So it kind of goes around.
So it's like my broken foot. It's broken into pieces, but still
kind of like
right,
holding on.
Right
and they
spot.
Can, yeah, it seems right. First of all, it breaks into seven pieces, and it's called Seven
oh,
Sisters.
Really?
I was like, oh, Seven Sisters, that's seven the seven
pieces.
Of us. And it turns out that's not where the name comes from. Oh, I mean, it might be a reference to the name, you know, of the seven
Seven
Eves.
So seven big...
Big rocks. But then, as they're watching, two rocks bump into each other, and now there's nine, because one of them breaks into three pieces or something like that.
Okay.
And then there's 12.
But if they break in lots of smaller parts, isn't that then easier to fall on Earth and nothing happens?
No, it's easier to fall on Earth, but still there's a moon-sized worth of rock falling into the Earth. It turns up, it heats up the Earth quite a lot, because you know every time every time a big rock comes in. You saw the videos of the one that came over in Russia and it blew up and people got sunburn, like they got suntan from the...
Okay.
Just imagine that, but that happening like every minute or then every second, you know,
Oops.
These big rocks falling in. That's what it's talking about. That's why it gets pretty hot on Earth. And they have to clear off and they're like, oh, it's going to be this hot on Earth for thousands of years. It's going to take thousands of years for us to,
to
survive.
Let's say we believe all this.
Okay, but first of all, I did, as soon as this came up, I was like, oh, well, they've got to get people, the Earth is being destroyed by the moon and they've got to get people off. And I was like, this reminds me quite a lot of a movie called Moonseed by Stephen Baxter, which I remember reading back in the 90s. Actually, it says it came out in... when was it? 1998, and that's probably the time when I was reading Stephen Baxter books as they came out. He does super hard science fiction. He pretty much does a whole genre of, okay, we've got to get someone into space using space technology that we have right now, left over from the Apollo mission and left over from this and much over. Like, what can we do to put all these different rockets together and send someone up into space? It's like, you know, The Martian.
Sounds a bit like Armageddon.
Yeah, a bit like Armageddon. But in the Armageddon, they go, oh, we've got these new spaceships that we just happened to have over here, these new, like, secret space shuttles. But with Stephen Baxter, he wrote a whole series of these books where it's like, oh, we need to get to the moon or we need to get into orbit, we need to get into space. And it's all about, yeah. How do we just...
With current technology.
Yeah, sort of like, oh, there's this Apollo rocket, or this Saturn rocket in this museum, or in, you know, in Houston, or in the Cape Kennedy Space Center. They're like, is that still good? I was like, oh, I guess it could be. And he tells all these stories about them putting it together. And that's what Moonseed is. So it's sort of like, okay, you know, it says, Stephen Baxter combines a host of disciplines, space travel, geology, disaster theory, to tell a tale where the rocks are literally swept from under the feet of humanity. And try not to yawn directly into. I know we've been drinking.
Excuse me.
I'm watching TV. Daredevil is really good. If anyone's got Netflix, I recommend it.
Don't get distracted.
No, I'm not. So I'm just saying that this is straight away. It's like a throwback to exactly the science fiction that people were telling us about. You know, with this Stephen Baxter. Oh, we've got to get someone up into space. You know, that kind of thing. So anyway, yeah, let's just go through these notes here. So my first thing is blow up the moon. Good start. And it is a good start. It's quite an interesting start, and it starts off really well. It's an interesting thing.
I remember you saying that when you started listening to it.
Yes, I was enthusiastic. And then we meet someone called Doc Dubois-Harris. And Doc Dubois-Harris is pretty much Dr. Harris, or Dubois, or Doob, as people call him. They call him Dr. Doob. He is pretty much Neil deGrasse Tyson. Do you know Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Who's that?
He's an astronomer, and he does lots of public speaking. If I showed you a picture of him, you'd recognize him. Okay. And Doob is pretty much him. He is like the American science explainer
like a TEDx talk guy.
Well, he does TEDx talks. He's got his own TV series. He does all the interviews. Anytime that anybody needs to know about science or astronomy or something, he's the guy talk to, which is... am I describing Neil deGrasse Tyson or Doc Dubois, Dr. Doob? Well, actually, I'm describing both, because it's pretty much... And then later on, I made a note here, later on, Elon Musk turns up. And I'm like, hey, this guy's Elon Musk. He's like a dot-com billionaire who then sets up a space company.
Private space company.
Yeah, it is very much like, oh, this book is about people that we know about now. And this is, it's totally for people like, oh, if you're a fan of Elon Musk, he turns out to be a hero. If you're a fan of Neil deGrasse Tyson, he turns out to be a hero. You know, all these like nerd heroes at the moment. Turns out they're all the good guys. They're all the people who do well. I'll get onto some bad guys in a minute. So as we're going through, I realize not just that it's like really, really current today. This isn't so much a complaint, but they say, oh, the people went crazy on Twitter, and then they did some clickbait stuff, and then they put it in Dropbox. And I'm thinking like, this is not going to age very well. This feels very, very, very much 2014, 2015. All of the cultural references are from right now. Right now. Even if some of the technology is a little bit advanced, like they've attached an asteroid to the International Space Station, and there's some robots going on up there, which isn't quite current for now, but it's sort of like, oh, but you're talking about Dropbox and Twitter and stuff.
It's plausible that this could be...
It could have happened. Yeah. So we're kind of in an alternate now. Like, we're not in right now, we're in
We have Dropbox.
But we have Dropbox. But then I was thinking, you know, like, but saying, oh, I'll just pop it in Dropbox, people went crazy on Twitter, and there's lots of other things that are talked about in this way. I was thinking, this doesn't age, because, like, this is the actual thought that I had. Like, it used to be when you went online, you would go surfing online. You would go, oh, do you have a hobby? Yes, I enjoy surfing. And people would go, like, real surfing or internet surfing. Now, people don't talk about surfing very much, because on the internet, there's so much that you can't just surf around. People don't just surf around. You could say you're browsing or something, but generally people find something that they like. They follow links, but we don't really use the term surfing very much, internet surfing.
Yeah.
It's not so much. But then in this book, they suddenly went, oh, Neal Stephenson then comes up and says, oh, and this person went on and was just surfing around on the internet. I was like, that feels really dated. Yeah, in a book where you're talking about Twitter and Dropbox, for someone not to follow a link to something but instead surf to something, I'm like, has Neal Stephenson been online recently? I don't even know. There's another cool thing. There's quite a few references back to this science fiction of the 60s and 70s and 80s and stuff. For example, he says, there's these dangerous rocks in the air, and he says, but who would call them anything? He calls them Mr. Bubbly and these asteroids, these dangerous bits of the moon that are floating around are actually quite dangerous. And he says, well, who would give them dangerous names like Nemesis? And I'm like, or like Lucifer's Hammer, which is by, I can't remember who wrote Lucifer's Hammer now. It's the names have totally gone from me. Same guy who wrote Ringworld, Larry Niven and... someone else. Can't remember.
Clark?
No, not Clark. But anyway, Lucifer's Hammer is like, if something is going to come and crash into the Earth, why call it Lucifer's anything? Like, why make it really scary? And
because it fits.
Yep. So these people get together, and it's all about the technicians. It's all about the scientists. But they're really, really weirdly alien. At one point, this guy, like, this is how a relationship goes. This is literally right from the book. And then he met her and he talked to her, and then he realized he's in love with her. And then later on, he was like, yes, I am in love with her. And I'm like, that's the love story? Like, you don't actually see them talking to each other, falling in love or anything? It's just like, and now I am a scientist and I have met member of opposite sex, and it has been long enough since last relationship equals... an emotional time, moon is blowing up, I am having a peak experience because I am an astronomer, equals I am in love with person I am experiencing this with. And I'm just like, I don't understand. And then later on...
Oh, missing what you miss is there. Oh, and my biology, my hormones drive me to it or something.
Yeah, my hormones are driving me to it because... Because the world is ending. It's like, oh, let's have babies. We're going to have babies. And other people are like, no, no babies. And so, but it's weird because then it's like, and then they had sex. And then he was thinking about calculus or maths or something like that as he was doing it. I'm like, whoa, back of a second. It's like, as he was orgasming, he was thinking about calculus. I'm like, okay, this is fine. I can understand if you
maybe
can imagine.
Nerds.
If you can imagine somebody being like, wait, it's fine, but it's just not me. And it was a few times when people were having these relationships with people, and I was just like, this is not me. Okay, so.
Maybe that's why you're not an astronomer.
I'm not an astronomer. So there is some stuff in this first about 2 hours of this audio, but when this is all being set up, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. It's very current technology. They've got this spaceship and there's stuff happening up there. I actually quite enjoyed quite a bit of this first section of the book, you know, part one. However, I did actually make this note. Let me look here on Goodreads. I made this note which said, where's my updates here? I said, here we go. Fun enough to start. Worst English. I'll get onto some of them. And then it says, after a fun start, there was a 7-hour stretch with no story and no plot and no character development, only logistics, space station design, and orbital mechanics. Thankfully, the story is happening again about 12 hours in. So in that first section, there was, you know, 3 or 4 hours or something of fun, like interesting story. Okay, we're going to make decisions, humans making decisions. And then a massive stretch, 6-7 hours, where all it was like, and now they have another thing to send up to the space station, and they're going to latch this thing onto here, and now they're building this thing here. Nothing was actually going forward in the story except... let me tell you more about spaceship design. Let me tell you more about orbital mechanics. Now, what I don't mind is all of that orbital mechanics. It would have been nice if there was a story going on at the same time and we were learning something about the characters and there was actually stuff going on, the characters were changing. But so much of it was just, okay, if we're going to have 500 people on a space station, what are we going to need? We're going to need this, 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 and this. And where is it going to be wired together? Okay, we're going to have to run this cable from there across there. You might think I'm exaggerating, but we had 6 or 7 hours of audiobook to kill with no story, and it was a lot of, and then they got this capsule and like they fixed it from this one to this end, and after it was there, it was there for a few months, and then they moved it over here and reconnected it there. Sounds pretty boring. Not actually that boring. Actually, you know, when I was saying you like the hard science fiction, if you like technical engineering, if you like orbital mechanics, it can work. However, it only worked up to a point, up until about the third time Neal Stephenson explained any one thing. For example, he says, talked about nuclear decay electricity generators 3 times now. And he's like, oh, you know what that is? It's about you get something that's so radioactive that it keeps giving off heat and you turn that heat into electricity. And that's the same way that satellites work in space. That's the, you know, the Mars rover that they sent over, the Curiosity Mars rover, has a nuclear engine and it does it by decay. It's just creating heat and that gets turned into it. And then about an hour later in the audiobook, and then they had this thing called an electrical generator that works by radioisotope decay, and it goes like, and it's just like, and after the third time, you're like, I've got it. I know, I've got it. Even before you told me about this, I'm a nerd. I like science stuff. I know. And so what I was thinking, it would be really great to read a really hard science fiction book which was pitched exactly at my level. Do you understand that?
Well, like, The Martian sounds very much like that.
Yeah, The Martian was. There was a few things, but that was like, there's a problem. Here are the parameters of the problem. And it didn't explain them 3 times. It was once, and then it gave you enough time in the story to work out the solution to that problem yourself. And then once you'd worked out the solution or a way to do it, then it would actually give the explanation. It was like a continuous puzzle program. But here it goes, and then there was this kind of thing. Now, let me explain what an L point is, the Lagrange point. Okay, the Lagrange point. There are 5 Lagrange points. I was like, I know, I've been reading science fiction all my life.
Yeah, but
I know what it is.
But not everyone has, and it's maybe for people.
No, because if this is not for hardcore science fiction nerds, like hardcore hard science fiction nerds, who is it for? Like, it isn't. It kind of falls into the gap that it's for kind of person like me who knows all about this stuff about space, who doesn't need to be told all these things, but then it repeats it so many times, it's like only someone like me who could find this interesting, but you're telling me it so many times over and over and over and over and over again that now I'm not finding interesting. Do you understand what I'm saying
there?
Yeah,
of course I understand that.
So anyway, let's keep going through this through my notes here, because I'm not gonna do this in the normal way. Okay, when America, this is the narrator. I'm gonna look up the name of the narrator.
He was complaining so much about that.
Mary Robinette Cowell. I think I've heard her narrate some stuff before. Certainly some short stories. Generally pretty good, but man, she is really, 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 really bad at accents. Now, I know I'm not really great at accents. In fact, I'm really bad at accents myself. However, nobody has to listen to me doing 20 hours of audiobook narration when it's talking about people from all over the world coming together to get to work together on a space station. So you get people from Russia, and you didn't even know what accent I was going to do there before I started it. And I made a note here. I said, when Americans do German accents, it always ends up as Welsh Pakistani.
True. So you had that before. Yeah,
and I played you a bit of this, and then I played you one of these clips, and I was like, hey, where is this from? And you played it, and you're like, and I was like, that's Switzerland. And you're like, really? Yeah. And they even make references about this guy who's from Switzerland, and because he talks German, he, like, there's maybe some references to Hitler or fascism in there, because he's like then becomes the leader. And I'm like, oh, but like, people from Switzerland don't sound anything like.
It has nothing to do with any kind of Hitler stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe Austria.
Maybe Austria. But Swiss is a separate language.
Yes.
Yeah, even German, you don't understand it. And it always has loads of chs and chs and chs in it.
But these people are working on international space stations, and there's like these Germans up there. And they are speaking like this. I am from Germany. And I'm just like, wait, if these people are working on the International Space Station and they're hanging around with international people, their accents don't sound like that. I hang out with lots, as someone who lives in German and as someone who's got an English-speaking German girlfriend, I don't listen to strong German accents all the time. And people who are up on the International Space Station who are German do not speak like they, you know, like, oh, I almost did it. I almost did the Welsh Pakistani there. They do not speak like they. You see, I'm going into the,
When Germans speak English and they have a very strong accent, they just speak everything very straight and everything.
No, but most Germans, I don't know.
You don't know these Germans. Yes. They exist and they have this very, very strong German accent and they can't get out of it.
I know.
But there is this one German astronaut. He has just been on space station recently.
Recently. Because you're doing German accent.
I try my very best. No, there has been an astronaut on the ISS recently.
Who
came down. And he also did some videos, like, yeah, they all the German astronauts in German, and also did some English speaking with it. There is a German accent, but by far not as much as this weird.
But that was the Swiss guy that I played you on the, and I was just like, okay, just think of any famous Swiss person, like Roger Federer, like when he speaks English. Like, he's an international guy.
You just understand him.
Yeah, he's just a normal. He just has a normal. You can tell. Oh, that's kind of European. It's just kind of
sometimes sweet, but
yeah, it's kind of sweet. But you don't need to listen to it. So anyway, the American. Oh, and then, okay. So there was a guy up there, and everyone from England had the poshest, like most, like all, like Prince Charles kind of accent. There was this guy who was up there as a robot technician or something like that, and they're like, "Oh, what are you doing at CNN?" It's like, "Oh, hello, my name," you know. And it's so like way like super high class, like upper class, stiff upper lip, like the most high class accent I've ever heard. And then there was another woman who was from like Jamaica or the West Indies, who then lived in North London and then went to university, and she speaks like, no, I can't even do it. It sounded like
my telephone voice.
Yes. Oh yes. But your telephone voice, it sounds much more like a Disney character, you know, like a Mary Poppins. But it's not even that. But it's like, oh, I do say.
It's such a pity that this is not a video blog. No, because everyone should see your face. You're pulling
anyway, so
funny
just
faces.
Imagine, like, you know, the biggest toffee. And this is a Caribbean woman who lived in the north of London is speaking like... But no, I can't even do it. It's so bad. The accents were so bad that every single time I had to listen to any two characters talking to each other, I couldn't do it. Like, it was... I had to just go, okay, these are Russians. Like, why did they have to put on these accents? Like, why couldn't they just say... It's not written. It's not like in a different font or a different typesetting in the book or a different script. Like, when you get to that person, just say their words. Just say, this is the Russian character's words. And then just say their words. You can put on a slightly different voice, but these accents were absolutely awful.
Why did you not just read the book as an e-book?
Because this is 880 pages and there's no way that I'm actually going to spend
30
time.
Hours.
Yeah, 30 hours, 31 hours audiobook, or 32 hours, 31 hours and 55 minutes. That's almost 32 hours of audiobook. I'm not going to spend time reading that. I can just put it on in the background when I'm listening to it and doing washing up and, you know, and walking around and stuff like that. It's passing the time book. It's not reading, enjoying reading. Anyway, so, so I think that's all I have to say. Really, no. Oh, in part three, different narrator, a guy called Will Damron, and he's not putting on accents and he's just reading the book.
Well, he just comes...
What?
And in addition to her?
No, like at the part one and two is Mary Robinette Coel, and then part three is Will Damron.
Oh, that's weird. Is there a point to it, or?
Well, yeah, because in the first point, it's about the Seven Eves. There's lots of female characters, and I'm like, okay, it's Seven Eves, female characters. We're gonna get a female narrator to do this, which is fine.
Okay,
but except whenever she like Dubois, Dr. Doob Harris, whatever his name is. He's obviously like kind of he's a bit of an older guy, but he's a big guy. And so you have a woman trying to put on a man's voice. Oh, retirement, his speech is like this. And I'm like, really? You're just going to kind of like drop your...
Drop your voice a bit and speak very low.
Lower.
Even lower. I can't even speak lower.
Now imagine listening to the main character of a book. And every time that you listen to the main character of a book, it sounds like this. Go for it.
It sounds like my voice has just slowed down.
Exactly.
Like five times.
Hello, my name is Dr. Doom. And I'm just like, why am I listening to this idiot? Anyway, so not a great audiobook listening to. Okay, so there's this person called Tekla, who is Russian.
Tekla?
And this book is like super racist. Like they're like, oh, they've got all these characters up in space, and the Americans are great, and these other people are great, these Europeans are great, and the Russians they can just be cannon fodder. They can all just die. And I'm like, whoa, go back a bit. So all the Russians are just volunteering to die, and all the Americans are volunteering to save the day.
What?
Like, yeah, that happens in this. So there's this character called Tekla. And she is, it's mentioned about three times that people down on Earth, because this is all happening in space, they're saving the day in space, and it's always being beamed down so people on Earth can watch what's happening up in the space station. And it says...
It's like Big Brother.
Yeah, kind of a Big Brother in space. and it says three times about fan porn about Tekla. Fan pornography, like people writing porn, or like creating porn about Tekla. And I'm like, how many times do we have to hear about it? And then one of the characters, Moira, or whatever her name is, I think Moira was the Caribbean North London person who speaks like this. No, that's it. I'm just doing random accents now. Anyway, the unbelievable voice, like the least sexy voice in the world. Not cute British voices, but like really... Anyway, those two. Then she suddenly starts having sexual feelings about Tekla, and they go, oh, like I'm feeling fuzziness between my legs and stuff. And I'm like... So after being told three times that people are making fan porn about Tekla, then we get to read someone lusting over Tekla. Like there's only like two moments or three moments of any kind of romance or sex in the book. And one of them is about the character that we've already been made to feel dirty that people are writing fan porn about her. Let's keep going through. So at one point they introduce a character who needs stuff explaining to her, and I'm like, okay, that's handy. Why don't we just explain stuff?
Sounds like the mirror effect.
Yeah, and then she looked in the mirror and she described herself for the person at home to see. No, it is one of those tricks, but in a way, it kind of flagged up what the rest of the book was missing. I kind of really wanted more ignorant people who needed stuff explained to them, because all the way through, stuff will be happening, like important stuff later on with the story. And they're like, and then thousands of people were dying on Earth. And now, let me tell you about this software that is using. And this software is programmed to be like this. So when the orbital mechanics goes over here, this person goes here. And we see that things come up, and this movement is flagged up. And when there's red over there, it's black. And then there's black over here, that's good. And then there's blue over here. And now we do all of this stuff. And it just goes on for like minutes and minutes about them talking about this program. Going,
so is it people talking about it?
No, it's just the author talking. It's just the author telling us about it. And then it goes, meanwhile, millions of people are dying on Earth. And then this, and I'm just like, all that stuff. You just talk to me about the inner workings of this computer program and how it tracks this and how it tracks that and how it tracks this and doing this. And of course, why didn't she just say she looked at the computer program? There were red marks flashing across the entire screen. And I'm like, that's it. That's all it took. Red marks flashing across the entire screen. But it's because there's massive, massive 10-page diversion into how this software works. And all it does at the end, it goes, when there's black, it's good. When there's blue, it's okay. When it's red, it's bad.
Probably bad.
Just tell me that. Just say, when it's red, it's bad, and then get on with it. Just get on with the story. But it doesn't do it all the time. But it's right in the middle of really dramatic stuff. Really dramatic stuff. Like, stuff is going, I said, made a note here, the world is literally ending with family members dying and cities blowing up. But let's take a break to talk about data visualization. Why not just say red is bad? That's the note I made, which I just expanded on off the top of my head. And I didn't read down that far. Anyway, also, that's the kind of thing that happens. And again, I don't mind the long descriptions of technical stuff. It's fine. There's no problems with that.
As long as it's part of the story.
If it was part of a story, but it's not just... But it got to be not just not part of a story, but it also got to be interrupting a story. These character moments where people are literally going, this is the last contact that this person is ever going to have with their family that is dying down on Earth. Meanwhile, orbital mechanics. Let's have a lecture about that. Okay. Let me also make a complaint about the way that we are told stuff is very dramatic instead of being... shown it's very dramatic. There is this thing earlier on in this first, you know, 7-hour section where there's not a lot of story happening, where something goes wrong, someone needs saving. I was like, I'm actually excited about this. And I was like, if this kind of thing can happen throughout the rest of the book, this is going to be great. It doesn't. But we are told about other things that have been exciting having happened, if that makes sense.
What?
People get together and say, oh, that was very dramatic that just happened. And I'm like, don't have a conversation about two people talking about something being dramatic. Make it dramatic for me, the reading. And then there's another people like, you two were like a comedy duo. And I'm like, thanks for telling me. How about showing me? Like, make me, if there's a comedy duo between two people, make them act as a comedy, make me laugh, you know?
Yeah.
What's another one as well? Yeah, this happens as well. Later on, there's this thing going, and then this happened, and years later it would be known as this, and years later it would be known as this. And I'm like, don't tell me what years later people will find dramatic or heart-wrenching about now. Make it dramatic for me or wrench my heart. And other people are saying, they look back at the videos and the most tear-jerking moment was when this person did this and this and this. And I'm like, but when I just read about that happening, my tears weren't jerked. Yeah. Like, you can't just tell me that fictional people thousands of years in the future are going to find this moment tear-jerking when it didn't. I could see it was dramatic. And it was actually kind of nicely written, but it was kind of manipulatively written, because this main character is going out and they're dying and is like, this is going to be my final speech before I die. And I'm like, oh, okay, I understand this. He knows he's going to die, final speech before he dies. But then later we're told, oh yeah, thousands of people found this the most tear-jerking moment.
It makes you feel a bit guilty that you didn't find it tear-jerking, maybe.
It doesn't make me feel guilty. It makes me realize that Neal Stephenson is a really shit writer who can't make me feel. He didn't want to put it in. And I realized that's what this hard science fiction is all about. All of the effort that would normally go into making me care about these characters is continuously funneled into making me care about orbital mechanics and science. It's space science and spaceship design, which I kind of do care about, but it continuously got in the way of the other stuff,
yeah.
If you know what I mean. Like, there wasn't any, in this whole first section, this whole, like, you know, part one, it was all about the science and it was all about the technology, and that kind of got in the way of the character stuff that I was wanting, like, that would have been really handy to read about.
Yeah, I understand.
And also, there was no story. The story was, let's build a space station, and then it was 10 hours worth of space station building. Again, not always bad, but we see how it can be done a lot better, say, in The Martian, where it's like, okay, there's someone we care about. He got to get out of a sticky situation. let's go science.
And it gets dramatic by people just having to do quickly things, really, yeah, because it's urgent.
And there's a lot of that in this book. Yeah.
Now it gets dramatic.
And then it's sort of like, and then these two people fell in love. And I'm like, great. Thanks. Like, the Martian got around with it because it's one guy alone writing in his diary. You know, we don't get, like, there is no personal relationship. Yeah. There is none of that because it's just one guy by himself. And here it's like whole, like, things later on the book revolve around these two people falling in love. And it's just like, and then they had sex. And I'm like, you can't just have people falling in love as though it's orbital mechanics. Although I understand the whole point. Okay, let me move on. Let me go back to Goodreads.
Maybe that is his point.
Let me go back to Goodreads and see if there's another note that I made, another status of it. Talked about nuclear electricity three times, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Here I said, 55% of the way through, be careful what you wish for. I was craving human drama to go along with the technical details and logistics, but now every time we switch to politics and intrigue subplot, all I can think is, when can we get back to the orbital mechanics and capturing the comet story? Because part two is some of the most... Let me say, half of part two, like part of part two... Yeah. Or some subplots of part two are actually quite touching and dramatic and quite interesting. But a lot of it is bullshit interpersonal relationships and politics in the level which if you got two 12-year-old kids and said, okay, let's write about a bad guy taking over the world. And you go, okay, how would they do that? It's that level. It's that level. And that is not satisfying to me. Because, again, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but there's this politician. And it's agreed that none of the people, none of the nations on Earth that are dying, they can't send their politicians into space to save them. They can't send their national leaders. One of them comes up. And you're like, okay, so they broke the law and are now got up here and they're really manipulative. And what's going to happen? Is this going to have a good outcome? Is it going
to
have a good outcome?
Is he going to take over?
Is she going to? And it's like, well, what's going to happen here? And you're like, this is not, first of all, it's really, really shit. And it's really, really obvious. Like, the world, the future of humanity depends on nobody screwing this up. Someone turns up, starts screwing stuff up, and what do? Throw them out the airlock. That's all I was thinking. Throw her out the airlock. Shoot her. Kill her. Do something to her. Remove her from the situation. This is only going to be bad news. Only going to be bad news. And we just see this slow motion car crash of this leader getting more and more influence. And it's just so pathetic level of human interaction and manipulation is like, oh, and now I will send over there and that person will spy on that person, this person. And it's just like, it's just really like, and it would have been better if that just wasn't in there at all. You understand?
Like, maybe he wanted the tension.
There was no tension. It was just shit. It was just shit. I mean, all of the stuff that I liked in Anathem of this different society that was set up, I was like, oh, a new society and we're going to set it up. But it's set up in a way that is sort of like, and I was just kept thinking, are these real people? Are these humans in this situation? Because I didn't recognize any of them as human beings.
Yeah, but maybe in the last third that you didn't listen to, it turns out they are aliens.
Yes, they are aliens.
No, really?
No, you shouldn't shout into it. Oh. You keep changing your volume.
I'm very sorry.
It's okay.
I'm getting excited.
You'll just blow up people's...
Finding out things.
Not aliens, but... not humans. I'll get onto part three in a minute. Because there's some mild spoilers there. Anyway,
robots?
Robots. They're all robots. They're all aliens. No. So, so what have I got to say here? Telling us about YouTube and Reddit threads depicting how good someone was at their jobs. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing as well. It's sort of like, you were really good at your job. People on Reddit were talking about it a lot, and people were posting on YouTube about how good you were at what you do. And I'm like, stop. Like, any time that it came to science and technology, he would tell us about it and show us working and make it really clear what was going on and tell us stories and give the whole history. Every time it was two people interacting, not with technology, just with each other, it was always, and this person said, you know, and this person said that you were very good. Yes, I was very good.
Yeah, but this is YouTube and social media is not a reflection of how good you are in your job.
No, but it says,
really not.
I made a note here, we are told about tabloids telling other people that there was drama. But didn't hear that drama firsthand. We were just told that tabloids were reporting on drama that happened. Do you understand?
Oh. And yeah? if they report about drama, yeah, it gets more drama.
Yeah, it's sort of like, and I'm going to tell you how dramatic this was, this newspaper was talking about it, and these people on Reddit were talking about it, and these people on YouTube were posting videos about it. Isn't that very dramatic? And it's like, but those don't exist in this. I mean, they do exist, but they're fake people on Reddit, fake YouTube channels. Like, you just made up these fake YouTube channels to tell us how important this was. Yeah. This isn't about me saying, oh, you know, this history, this actual historic moment. It's not me saying, oh, 9/11 was really important, and it made the news, and it stayed on the news for 24 hours a day for, like, weeks and weeks and weeks, and it was all important. That actually is meaningful because it actually did do all of that.
Yeah.
You can't just make that up and then assign meaning to it, because anything, you can just say, oh, yeah, this person died and it was on the news for 3 weeks. You're like, how important was that person? Oh, quite important. What achieved the chance? Well, just believe me, there are lots of people talking about it. I'm like, okay, this must be like Princess Diana or someone like really important that people were talking about for a long time. Three times talking about water, use of water in space, actually more than that, but that's what I mean. I said, oh boy, so much repetitive, repeating redundancy.
Well, you have to fill a big book like that.
Oh, also weird stuff as well. We're told about there's this Amalthea asteroid, and it's protecting them, and we're told, oh, it absorbs crashes, like, over and over again.
That's handy.
People in space watching DVDs, I'm like, do they not have, like a hard drive full of movies or iTunes or something
DVDs?
Like that?
DVDs?
Yeah, in space, they watch DVDs. I didn't understand it as well.
Why?
Okay, I'm up to near the end of my notes here. I'm just going to go back to Goodreads. I'll go back to Goodreads and see if there's any more notes here. I said, this has turned very grim. I remember back 10 hours of audiobook ago when it was all about space station design, back when it was fun. Now, this is actually something I kind of enjoyed, how grim it got in part two, when it was all like, yay, saving the world, la 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 la, spaceship design, we're going off to these missions into space. And then, like, in this part three, part two, it gets, like, really dark and really grim. And I was like, oh shit. And again, parts of that I enjoyed. And it was taking me a little bit away from orbital mechanics, but it wasn't fun, but it was, like, interesting, you know.
Did the orbital mechanics come back?
Yes, a little bit towards the end, but not too much. Wow, how can you speak so quietly and then shout so loudly? Like, I can't understand this. The orbital mechanics did come back in a little bit. So let me move on now to 70% of the way through. Here's my status update. 5,000 years later, Really? How is this going to be the same story? Fuck. And it was one of those moments that I was like, oh, this is, it was just at the point where it was getting really interesting and there was all this personal drama and it got down to just seven of us, just seven, you know, like the 70. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is really cool. This is where it's all going to happen. It's all going to kick off. We've got this really tight thing. There's no science to be done, a little bit of science to be done with some biology stuff, but it's getting really tight down. And now it's all going to kick off because it's like, it's so personal. They're all in the same little room. They're all in the same room. And now it's going to kick off. And it does kick off for a little bit, like half a chapter. And then it suddenly goes, part three. 5,000 years later, and I'm like, wait, go back, wait a second, let's go, wait a second.
Maybe he was just not brave enough to get it out.
I don't know what he was thinking. I mean, I don't mind it when someone like Alistair Reynolds just suddenly goes, this next book, 5,000 years after the previous book, and you go, whoa, did nothing important happen in between? And you're like, oh, actually, loads of really important stuff happens in between, but now this is a story that he wants to tell.
Will be another book about
it. It'll be just another book with different cast of characters. He did this one with the Blue Remembered Earth and the next book, the elephant book in the series. You know, in the first book, the elephants are kind of dumb. In the second book, the elephants are a little bit more intelligent. You're thinking, oh, the next book is going to be thousands of years later on. The elephants are going to be like equal with humans or something. You know, that's the kind of trajectory that you think across these three books. This isn't three books. This is one book. Part one, part two happens all within the space of a few years. Part three, 5,000 years later.
Why 5,000? I just mean, can't you just do like 300?
Well, no, but the whole point is that the rocks are going to rain down on Earth from the moon for 5,000 years. That was the thing. Okay.
Oh, okay.
This is not really... I think I read some other reviews where people said, oh, it skips ahead. I don't think this is a big spoiler to say that the part three of the book skips ahead a bit. I didn't get that far into it because it's just so dumb and dull and boring and repetitive and dull and dumb. It's just one of those things where you just go, okay, there's this book called Last and First Men by Olaf Stapleton, and it's not a science fiction novel. All it is, and now let me tell you about the future history of the Earth. And these people were this, and the Germans did this, and then they did this, and then thousands of years later, there was another race of humans that looked a bit like this, and did this, and did this. And there's no characters, and it's just, that's all it is. It's just future history. That's what this book felt like for so long. And it was so boring, because nothing happened. Nothing happened. In 5,000 years, nothing happened. Nothing.
But what about these the leftover...
There's a fine. Okay, repopulated the Earth. There's billions of people living in orbit around the world, and they're going to send people down to Earth because Earth is going to be... they're going to repopulate the Earth in a bit. They've terraformed the Earth again. They've cooled it down, dropped water on it and stuff like that. There's loads of people, billions of people living in all these orbital space stations around the world.
Wow.
Not 5,000 years, billions of people later, nothing has happened. Nothing. Nothing. They still name all of their orbital cities after places that were wiped out on Earth.
5,000 years ago?
5,000 years later. All of the there's a space station which has got all these like big kind of blocks that people live in. It's like orbiting, but there's these blocks. I don't need to explain it. But they say, oh, we call it Manhattan or we call it New York because all the people there have the same attitude as the people in New York, and that's where people go for shopping.
How do they know how the attitude of people in New York were?
I don't... Well, they know it because they saved movies and stuff. But how can they care about that? It's like saying, what happened in our... What happened 5,000 years ago in our world? There was people like in Egypt or something like that. We don't... our lives don't revolve around
any idea about
you think,
that.
Okay, maybe 4,000 years ago. Okay, 3,000 years ago, like 2,500 years ago, some people in Greece came along. We kind of know what they were doing. And they do actually form a bit of it. But it's not like the most important thing to us. They're talking about the epic, which is the people coming and founding it. But it's like the people in Rome now don't think about Remus and Romulus. That's something which is just... that people go... It goes by year after year, and people in Rome don't think about that, even though that is their founding myth. But in this book, there are no cultural references which aren't pre-year zero. Year zero is when the moon blew up, yeah?
Okay.
Every single cultural reference comes back to something that happened or a place that existed or characters that existed before zero. Nothing is referenced. And they've built these massive, amazing contraptions, these orbital space stations, these things that are like these cities hanging on tethers down into the atmosphere. There's this big thing that spins around and it's, you know, 300 kilometers across in orbit and stuff. And it's amazing. Like, all of the technical stuff that he's describing is amazing. First of all, it's not amazing descriptions of amazing technology. It's just descriptions of amazing technology, which is really disappointing. It hasn't learned anything from all of the big, dumb objects that Ian M. Banks writes about. He makes you really think, oh, this place is fantastic. Not because it's more impressive. It's because he writes about it in an impressive and interesting way.
Yeah.
You know, even though he often goes, okay, let's just take a break from the story for a while. Now let's do an info dump about this thing. But he does it in a way which I care about. And it doesn't get in the way of the story. It just complements the story. But this was just like, it's sort of like, and then it was just like history lesson after history lesson after history lesson. All of it 100% conservative, backward looking. And all of it was talking about nothing that happened. Nothing, none of the characteristics of any of the people who were left over 5,000 years later were based on anything that happened after part two of the book 5,000 years later. There's nothing in between which affected it.
Mm.
Do you understand? Like, there was these seven Eves, seven different nations that went off. You know, it's kind of very biblical. This person was the father of and then 5,000 years later, the defining characteristics of everybody in the novel is based on something that happened 5,000 years ago. And grudges that they held. Oh, this person did this to this other person 5,000 years ago, and now that affects our national policy. Now, I'm just like, that doesn't happen. Like, even now, with Obama and Iran, he's going, oh, let's actually, you know, that stuff that happened back in the 70s. Let's start forgetting about that. Let's start moving on, you know. Like, this stuff, like, I'm British living in Berlin. Like, it's not the kind of thing that lasts 5,000 years. Countries get over things. People get over personal things between each other in a decade or two decades or something like that.
Right.
Like Japan after the Second World War, how long did it take for like Americans to come in there and go, okay, let's help out here a bit, you know, move stuff around. Germany, the same thing. Let's get some Marshall planning going on here. You know, all this kind of stuff. We get over it. Alliances don't last 5,000 years. They probably don't even last 5 years.
Exactly.
Grudges don't last 5,000 years, you know. You could be saying, oh, maybe they're saying something about religious stuff, you know, with like the Jews and the Christians and Islam, you know, and they're all fighting over stuff that happened 2,000 years ago. They're not really fighting about stuff that happened 2,000 years ago. They're fighting about stuff that happened like last year when someone dumped a rocket on them and they put a bomber back on, a suicide
and
bomber
also,
back on.
It's not all of them.
That's what they're fighting. Yeah, it's not all of them. First of all, it's not the entire world.
Exactly.
It's not the entire race. It's not everything. And also, they're not really upset about who has Jerusalem. They're upset about some fucker coming over and shooting his family and the other guy coming over and shooting the other guy's family or the other guy's whatever it is, you know. That's what it's not like, and it was just so unreal. I couldn't believe anything. It doesn't matter how good the technology was or if we were meant to, and the people themselves, because they've all been genetically modified over all this time, they're not humans anymore and they're not having like human relationships with people.
And they don't need to.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're not human. And it's really difficult to really care about these people because they're not even really people. And I said, I said here, it's not only is it unrealistic that nothing happened in 5,000 years, it makes it feel less real. You know, I can't believe that nothing happened. And also, and this is the worst thing, I can get away with a story which is like the author's gone, oh, I've got this idea for something and I'm just going to kind of like jam everything in, like the jigsaw doesn't fit, but he's just kind of like slamming it with a hammer until it all fits in exactly how I need this to have happened 5,000 years later. So it will happen. Like logic doesn't dictate it. The author dictates it. It can all happen if that's done in a clever way. But time and time again, it isn't. It isn't. There was this thing where they go, oh, the rooms, which are spiritual rooms, they're called cupolas. And the reason why they're called cupolas, and then it goes back to this thing that happened 5,000 years ago in the International Space Station 5,000 years ago, which is why this is named after this and it's named after that and it's because of this and it's because of that.
We just read that, didn't we? Like,
what?
We just read about the space station and the space station.
Yes,
and all
but
the...
everything can't go back to that. And if it does, do it in a clever way. Like this thing called, they called it the chapel on the space station. Dubois called it the woo-woo room because it's sort of like, because it's the room of woo-woo, you know, stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's clever. But why don't they just call this, like the couple of, like, why don't they just make a passing reference to it as being called a woo-woo room and just leave it at that? But it isn't. It's sort of like, and it was called the cupola because that is the place that Dubois said was the place that was the chapel back down there 5,000 years ago. And it goes back to his, everything goes back to this. And also, everybody is saying stuff which is using these really archaic terms now. They're like, and that person, they said, oh, I'll just punch in this destination. And they said, and it was called punching in because this person, they had this kind of attitude that they were taking. And this, and this person went from this time zone to this time zone. And it's like she had jet lag. But of course she couldn't have jet lag because jet lags don't exist anymore. And she thought, oh, isn't it weird that we still use this word jet lag that isn't used anymore? Like every single time that there was anything that was slightly different or couldn't exist 5,000 years later, it would then say, but of course her feet wasn't on the real ground because the real ground isn't this. And oh, moonstruck. Oh, I can't really be moonstruck because moonstruck doesn't mean that because there isn't a moon anymore. And we're all actually a part of the moon because they took the moon apart.
But
and
maybe this is what you said that before what? To me, that thing with the explanation. I was thinking that feels very much like some person reading this and going to the author and saying, look, this doesn't quite work like this way. And then he said, ah, okay, well, then maybe I need explanation why this is still in use. So
but
that
it
the characters
can't be in use. It can't. 5,000 years ago, language changes. Like, what? What are we? What is it even thinking
are
that
there,
this
are there
could still
accent
be?
Again? Are there accents? Still?
No, actually, he just speaks in English, and it's really great. Although at one point it actually says, and then these people were isolated for a long time from the mainstream of society, the civilization, and then when we rejoined, it's like they weren't talking Anglo-Ruski anymore. And you're like, Anglo-Ruski? And I was like, oh, that's quite clever. And just as I was thinking Anglo-Ruski, and I was like, yeah, what languages they speak on the International Space Station?
Russian and English.
Russian English?
Yeah.
Anglo-Ruski. And I was like, oh, that's quite clever. As I was thinking, oh, that's quite clever, it literally says, and which is the language, or which is Russian inflected English, because this is the main languages on the International Space Station that took place back in the years. And I was like, no fucking way! You really? Anglo-Ruski is from the ISS, and that was the two official the languages on the International Space Station 5,000 years ago, and that's gonna be... And, like, I couldn't believe it. It's like, it was so unartistic, so, like, punching you in the face over and over again of just how
dumb and how dull the writing is to continuously go back 5,000 years. I was like, and this person did this because 5,000 years ago, fucking hell, it was 5,000 years ago. Nobody gives a shit. Nobody gives a shit. I don't give a shit. If you jump forward 5,000 years ago, you have to go, okay, let's take it all back. Anyway, so I decided that after like not being able to put up with this, I thought I'll just look on Wikipedia and spoil this for me, because there's this twist coming. There's a hair attached to your microphone shield. There's this twist coming. I know there's a twist coming. Ooh, what are these people left over? They spotted some weird people on Earth. And I was like, I know who these people are, because one of the characters, her father, went into a mine and... No, this can't be spoilers. Nobody could be dumb enough for this not to be obvious to them. It starts with part three. She flew over a lake in her little flitter and she saw someone. There shouldn't be anybody out here. And then she flew on and they're like, who could this person be? Let's get together.
5,000 years later?
Well, they went into underground and they survived. I looked on Wikipedia, they just survived. But there was another bit, it was like, these people went into submarines and went down to the bottom of the trenches. Would they survive? I don't. And this is like these two relations of people who were like in the spaceship. Mm. Like one of the women of the Eves, the seven Eves, who survived. Her father is a mining person. I mean, that's what she was doing up there. She was doing asteroid mining. So he was mining. I'm going into this mine and I'm going to close the door. And goodbye, 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 daughter. Goes in, closes the door. Don't hear from him again. Is like, yep, I bet he's back before the end of the book. Someone else, hey, we're going into the submarine down into the end. Wife up on stage. Goodbye, goodbye, bye, goodbye. And I'm like, well, he's going to be back. And of course, I didn't know there was going to be a 5,000-year jump.
5,000 years later.
Hey, Wikipedia says they survived. And then there was these other people who went off to Mars. It's like, we're going off to Mars. Goodbye, bye, off to Mars, bye. And I'm like, they're going to be back. Wikipedia doesn't mention them. But those are the only options. People who don't, like, who are these people on Earth? They shouldn't be there. And it's like, we know who they are. We know who they are because you sent them into the book. It was 5,000 years ago for these people. It was just a few hours of audiobook ago for me, like 10 hours of audiobook. I remember them going underground. I remember them going down into the bottom of the ocean in the submarines. I remember the people going off to Mars. It's going to be one or two or three of those people. That's all it can be. The people on Mars, the people at the bottom of the oceans, or the people in the minds. That's it.
5,000 years.
Turns out Wikipedia page. Let's go to the Wikipedia page. This is hopefully this is not spoilers for anyone. It might be spoilers for the idiots here as well. They investigate mysterious people who have been sighted on Earth. As the story unfolds, it is discovered that some of the humans survived the hard rain, which is the rocks falling down, by living in the deep mines. They're called the diggers, while others survived in the ocean trenches using submarines. They were called the pingers. These survivors also evolved socially and biologically to form two additional races to the seven.
But that would be fun, because then you could see, do they still speak the same languages?
Do they speak Anglo-Rusky?
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't.
Now,
I understand
that if there is this epic, there is an epic. And everyone knows this epic, which is the recordings of the people going through year zero and going up to the space station. All of that's recorded on hard drives and it survives, you know. People know that. Then the cameras, after the few years, the cameras broke. So then there's only that first dozen years or so of these people going on this adventure to get away from Earth.
Yeah.
And that survived. So I'm kind of going, okay, that would kind of be the way that the like everything is kind of bound up in that, and those people are speaking English and Russian, so that becomes like a baseline language.
Yeah,
but that it just doesn't work that way. That's there's a reason why we don't all speak Greek and don't all speak Latin, and then don't all speak Chaucer's English, and then don't speak Shakespearean English, and all these other things. It's because it doesn't matter how much culture is in there. If there's only 20 people in this epic or whatever, you know, however many people survive. If later on, 5,000 years ago, there were billions more people, language just moves on.
Yeah, and billions of people,
the language just moves on. There is nothing that language doesn't do except move on.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. There is no going back. I mean, maybe with a very, 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 very small number of people who are all being educated by one digital teacher that never changes,
yeah,
I can understand it. But it isn't that. You know, it's this massive thing, and I just didn't. It's just that whole third section. It doesn't matter how good the space engineering is. I just can't put up with utter stupidity. Which brings me back to the fact of this book. I was really wanting it to be another Anathem, which I think I gave like 4.9 stars. And even to this day, it's still an amazing book. Like, there's amazing world building in there because he kind of goes back and starts from scratch over with everything. But there isn't, like, in there they have lots of different names for things that we have in our world.
Yeah.
But it's a different world. It's like a parallel world.
Okay.
But so they have phones, but they're mobile phones, but they don't call them mobile phones. They call them G-Jaws or something like that. Okay. And it works because it doesn't always say, and this is what we call a mobile phone because of this thing that happened. No, it doesn't. It just goes, this is a G-Jaw, this is this technology.
And
it
just have to figure out.
You just figure it out. That, oh, these are different names. And it's the total opposite of this. This is going, and now let me explain the 5,000 year history of computers after year zero. Okay, it started off like this, and then it did this, and then they developed this kind of hard drive, and then this one, but it didn't work like that, and now we're going to do... It doesn't... Like, all of that kind of thing is kind of in Anathem, but it's about a world which is just, you know, just more believable. Even though it's completely fake, I kind of care about it because there's characters in it which are doing interesting stuff and having interesting problems. And here, I'm just like, this problem of they're setting up, they got these seven people together, one of each race. And it's super racist as well. Anyway, one of each race. And they're like, let's all get together and let's discover where these people come from. I was like, I already know they're the people, they're the diggers and the pingers. Although I didn't know their names for them then. But it's like, if that's the main thrust of the last 8 hours of this audiobook, I'm giving it a pass. I can't deal with it. So I don't know what happens in the end.
Maybe I should continue listening because now I'm in the story and I can just enter it.
You can listen to the last 8 hours of this audiobook. You've got other things to talk about and read about and listen
and
to and stuff.
To do.
Yeah, so that's it. So unfortunately, it has a quite bad failing grade. I really wanted to go into this liking this because it takes so long to get through. Look, we've been talking about it almost for exactly an hour now. So let's wrap up. Seven Eves, 4 stars is the average rating.
Yeah, I can see that
on Goodreads.
Oh, I found one person who rated it 1 star.
Who's that? Matthew.
Yeah.
Said, I knew I was going to hate this novel around page 270 when Stevenson, technocrat extraordinaire, decided to spend a page complaining about modern gender theory and academic lefties who are wasting time and energy. Yeah, there is a bit of that. It is very, it is, what does he
very
say
complain-y?
Here?
Complainy?
Jingoistic libertarian nonsense. It is very, I know it's weird to say this is Europe, it feels very American, very conservative, very libertarian.
It sounds very much like that. I think
and
I would not like that.
The main bad people, are the politicians, the bad guys, or bad girls, bad people.
So either you're Russian, female, or a left person.
What do you mean?
A left liberal
person. It's not so much left liberal. What I'm saying about conservative, it's that, like, it's the conservative, like I say, Elon Musk turns up with the scientists. They save the day. And it's like, yeah, okay, like, I'm sure Elon Musk is a really nice guy, but maybe he isn't. Like, maybe all the stories come about of him as being totally controlling and, you know, like Steve Jobs is all the legend. Like, he was an amazing designer, amazing business leader, but you didn't want to go to dinner with him. Like,
no, he was
or like be in a business
bit
meeting.
Of a weird person.
He would just rip your head off. And I understand that these people, but it's a lot of this is the he says it was Matthew rated it 1 star. This anti-humanities screed, it was the last straw. Oh yeah, it's very much science, great, humanities and art and history. No,
who needs art?
Yeah, and it's
music.
All just it is. Yeah, it says an intellectually lazy, full of straw men. That I'm just reading from Matthew's review now, and it goes on for quite It says, the plot of this novel, as it such it is a poor man's Kim Stanley Robinson. You'd be better served to read Red Mars. At least the politics are more complex and nuanced than government is bad, you guys. That is totally it. And this is the thing. This is that middle section of the stuff that I liked in that middle part two.
Yeah.
All of the middle section is like, and then the president comes up, and the president is evil and does evil stuff by being manipulative and evil. I'm like, throw out of an airlock. Problem solved. Or write better, Neal Stephenson. Write a convincing character who has actually got motivations.
We just watched Daredevil, and this is the best example of showing that bad and good is not like this. You can't just say a bad person is all the way bad.
Yeah.
And you can't say the good person is the good person, because it just doesn't work that way. Everyone has shades of good and bad.
It's not just about that, but if you're going to be Mr. Evil... Like, have a good reason to be Mr. Evil. This, I'm saying in this book, in Seven Eves, the main They even have a conversation and say, why is this person being such a controlling evil person? They're like, because she's probably a controlling evil person. So why is she doing this? It's because she's controlling an evil and she's just trying to stir things up and then she can be controlling an evil.
And she doesn't even have reason to do that.
No, she is in a position where she wanted to save her own life. She saved her own life. And then what does she do? She starts taking over, shit stirring, and just doing, like, bullshit stuff. And you're like, what are you doing? Like, even... like, if you want to survive, why are you doing this? Turning people about against each other in ignorance and doing this and manipulating and lying and doing all that. You're just like, what? Like, why are you doing that? And what are you doing it for? It was never explained. It was just like, oh, yeah, evil people do evil stuff. And I'm just like, you've got to be better than that.
Yeah.
You've got to be better than that. Like, you've got to just write better characters than that. Like, or just don't have a bad guy. I don't. That's the thing that you can complain about Kim Stanley Robinson and Stephen Baxter when they do the hard science fiction. It's like, well, there's no bad guy in this. It's just like people trying to do something and then failing.
But it doesn't always have to be a bad guy in the story.
No, there doesn't. In this, like I say, if
the
that,
bad guy there is if the, that character is the, just been is left the catastrophe out. Happening, yeah. That is the bad guy.
Yeah. Why not? Just like, and this is the good thing. This is always great. Have the one person who has a bit of hubris who dies. Great. That's always good to have a scientist who thinks he was a bit too big for his boots mm-hmm. and then dies. Or then almost dies and then twists around and then dies.
And then, in the and end, then, be good.
But Gate gives his life for it, you know. So he gets to die, but also be a bit of a hero or something like that. I'm all into that. But you can't just go, and now Mr. Evil will be Mr. and Mrs. Evil will be Mrs. Evil. And Mrs. Evil will talk to these other people. And
she's evil because she's evil.
Yeah. And I'm just like, what does she. She's evil because she wants power. It's like. What she's doing is going to kill the human race. Like, what are you even... like, why is she still alive? Like, what in what world would she not be thrown out of the airlock here? And I'm not always a good one, a big one for like, yes, let's solve our problems by violence. But I'm just like, throw her out the airlock. Take her. Bump her on the head. Put her in the airlock. Open the airlock. And she'll be dead. And she'll be gone. And she won't be a problem. If you do it now, before everyone knows she's still around... You'd have avoided this. Oh, what are you going to do? Put her in the general population. Oh, great. No, general population. The other ones. There's this whole 1,000 people out here who are just ripe, who just need a controlling, manipulative leader. Just put her in among all those people. Everything will be fine. I'm like, no, don't do this. It's going to lead to disaster. You know, 4 disasters later, they're still like, hey, come in, join this conference. Like, just fucking kill her. That one as well. The other one over here. Miss Evil number 2. Just kill her as well. Don't do this, otherwise there's going to be problems. There'll be problems. Believe me, there'll be problems. Then they have a meeting and they're like, you know, there's going to be problems in the future. I'm going to make a curse and I'm going to make a prophecy and the prophecy of things are going to be bad and I'm going to curse you for all eternity. It's going to be bad. And I was like, told you should have put them out of the airlock. Then it goes, 5,000 years later, guess what? War between these people over here and over here. And I'm just like, I told you this was going to happen. Like, why was this not a surprise to anyone? It said... 5,000 years ago, you're going to regret this. And then they do it, and you regret it. I'm just like, you should have thrown her out the airlock. And this other one, you should have just killed her. Anyway, it's just so pathetic. Right, I'm going to stop doing this. I'm going to give this book 1 star, because it doesn't matter how good, how much I enjoyed some of the logistics and the spaceship design and all that kind of stuff. It didn't mean anything in the end. There was nothing to it. It was just like, let's just read a technical manual. There was no excitement to the characters or the story at all. It was just like, yeah, here's some interesting stuff. And by the time it got to the end, it was just like, it was just boring descriptions of admittedly quite impressive.
Meaningless.
Because you're just like, and now let's have a description of this place. Okay, we're going to go there and going to do this. And it was all described in terms that we were like, back in year 0 when this happened. And I was like, oh, fucking hell, just describe it. Describe it as what it is now. The people, like, I didn't believe any of the people were real because they didn't have their own culture.
Yeah.
Let's stop. We want to go to bed, not too late. So 1 star for this book. I kind of want to give it more than 1 star because I think I gave the Snow Crash 0.9 stars or something like that, or 0.5. Maybe I'll give it 1.5 stars, but I didn't finish it and I've had a lot of ranting about it. 1 star. I really wanted this to be Anathem and it really wasn't. It wasn't as bad as Snow Crash, but in some ways there was as much to complain about, but also along with it, more interesting stuff. 1.5 stars. Let's give it 1.5 stars.
Be nice.
1.5 stars, because there was parts of it that I enjoyed. I actually had a smile on my face when listening to some of this. But also, I do an Audible ad. Don't download this book from Audible. First of all, it's not a great book. Second of all,
get some other books.
One of the narrators wasn't very good. Ari X.
Get Anathem.
Anathem. Actually, I don't know. That might be a slog to get through as an audiobook as well. I'm going to recommend, let's have a look, The Dying Earth by Jack Vance, which I read ages ago. I keep saying I'm going to get around to reviewing it. I will do. So read The Dying Earth, or also check it out, City of Golden Shadow, Otherland, Book 1 by Tad Williams. We're going to be reviewing that probably next week, because Julianne will finish it then. So check it out. All of these things, go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And in doing so, you can get a free trial, which means you can download any of these books for free. And if you sign up, you get one credit or two credits each month, depending on what plan you get. And both me and Juliana have independently signed up for this, and we both have this kind of thing. It is fantastic. If you don't want Dying Earth by Jack Vance or City of Golden Shadow, by Tad Williams, Otherland Book 1. You can check out, 180,000 other audiobooks? There's a load of them. Some amazing stuff. So even if the things that I've been reviewing recently haven't really held up.
And even if you don't want an English audiobook, they also have German, French, Spanish, whatever you want.
Loads of different languages too.
It was also
Check this out. Go on this and download from Audible, Moonseed by Stephen Baxter from 1998.
Is that audiobook version?
Maybe. I don't know, actually.
Just check that book out in general.
Yeah, that's to be honest, I just remember it. I'm not sure if it is better. Maybe if I read it now, it wouldn't be so good. But it is only 500 pages, not 888 pages.
But the people who read this book now, maybe
what, Moonseed?
If they now read Seven Eves, if they now then read this one, they will see the parallels in it.
Yeah, of course they will.
As much as you do. And then send you a message about it.
But Moonseed, I actually remember there's loads of scenes from Moonseed where I'll be like, oh, that's amazing. You know, this stuff happens in Edinburgh Castle and they go up to Arthur's Seat. And even when I was going back to Arthur's Seat a few years later, I was like, oh, this is the place that happened in this book. You know, and this other thing happens and they crash the spaceship in the end and they melt. And I'm just like, oh, this is all really. And I remember, and Venus blows up. And that's the first page. I'm like, Venus blew up. Holy shit, what's happened? In the same way as this was like, the moon blew up. Holy shit, what happens? And actually, we never did find out why the moon blew up. Maybe that's answered in part 3, but it seems like probably not. She was like, the moon's blown up, shit. And in this one, it's like, Venus has blown up, shit. And then they have to work out what's happened.
Sounds fun.
All right. To be honest, Moonseed, Stephen Baxter, much more fun. Audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Check it out. That's it from me. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every email. You can also get in contact with both me and Juliana on goodreads.com. We are members there. Become our friends. Follow along with what we are reading and liking and reviewing as we go along. You can join the SFBRP listener group and check out that, where we're chatting among ourselves. And also, you can recommend books there. Books I would like to see reviewed in that listener group forum. If you want to get me to read something, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. And Juliana, what are you on? Yuku Berlin. J-U-K-U Berlin. Is Juliana Kunzendorf Berlin.
Yeah.
J-U-K-U Berlin. At J-U-K-U Berlin. And you can see what Juliana. So what are you doing tomorrow, Juliana?
I'm having a podcast with Jenny from Reading Envy.
Yep, Juliana's going off to do her own guest spot on another podcast, which should be fun. I will stick that here in the SFBRP feed to everyone to also download. Oh, so what?
That's almost pressure on me.
You're going to be talking about some science fiction and some other books on there. Should be good fun. That's about it. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.